Thought Bubble Audio.
Look, up in the sky!
You will never find the more wretched hive of scum and villainy.
Welcome to Beer with Geeks with Tim and Frank.
Who are you?
I'm Batman.
I am Iron Man.
Your friendly neighborhood Spider-Man.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
My name is Inigo Montoya.
You're a wizard, Harry.
A couple of guys with a couple of beers and a whole lot of pop culture nostalgia.
Make it so, number one.
Ladies and gentlemen, the Beatles.
Name the dog Indiana.
Life finds a way.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Now sit back and crack open a cold one. Because it's time for Beer with Geeks.
It comes in pints?
Shaken, not stirred.
Great Scott!
I was way off. I knew it started with an S, though.
Hi, and welcome to Beer with Geeks, where two geeks geek out with beer. I'm Tim, and with me, as always, is my friend with only one hand, Frank. How are you today?
I'm good. It was a little bit of a disappointment when my mechanical hand was taken away. But I'm learning to cope with it. You know, every day is a new day. Every day is a new challenge, and I'm doing my best here.
That's good.
Yeah,
I'm happy for you. Frank, today you're drinking a beer. What are you drinking?
I am drinking a beer that is known as the Four Hands Brewing Company Chocolate Milk Stout.
I said you didn't have a hand and you're drinking a beer about four arms.
Yeah, it's a cruel, cruel irony that I am down to one hand and yet this beer gets four of them. It's a chocolate milk stout. I love this can. I want you to see it because on the one side it's got, okay, here's like the name, Four Hands Brewing Chocolate Milk Stout. And the other side it's got this cow in like a milkman uniform, milk stout.
That is funny.
But it is a delicious stout with cacao nibs. and it says here, food pairings, chocolate, grilled beef.
That's
not like at the same time, but like chocolate or grilled beef.
Oh, okay. I understand now. I was just, my mind went to a strange place and you're like, grilled beef in your beer. That sounds
like a steak. No, like awful. You can have this either with dessert or with a steak.
That makes way more sense.
I'm going to crack this open. But what are you having?
Oh, yeah. I made that sound as you were making a sound. Mine sounded more like a cat hissing, but it's okay.
It did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay. I am drinking an old, reliable Sam's Cold Snap.
Cold Snap. I don't think I've had a Cold Snap this winter, actually.
You're missing out. Cold Snap the best.
I love it.
I love it.
It's I would say Cold Snap is the porch rocker of the winter.
Yes, I look forward. Cold Snap and Porch Rocker are probably my two favorite Sam seasonals.
Yeah, I think so.
Yeah, over summer, over Oktoberfest, it is those two. They are so good.
Yes,
so good. Anyway, so good. We saw Black Panther. Bum, bum, bum. Ow!
Wow.
Who sings that song?
So, you're about to hear two white guys talk about Black Panther. Isn't that what you were looking forward to? What did two white guys think about this movie?
Yep. That's exactly what they were looking forward to, Frank.
The whole world wants to know. They're waiting with bated breath.
Yeah. And I'll tell you exactly what I thought about it. Here's my list. Number one, movie was great. Number two, everyone should see it. Number three, this is an important cultural touchstone and should be talked about that way. Four, the movie is just a good movie and doesn't call on to the fact that it's a cultural touchstone.
That's right.
There.
That's right. Yeah. It's just a good movie. I want to say right up front, I like that it's very much, in many ways, a sort of standalone movie. It doesn't rub its MCU-ness in your face. You can have seen this movie without really knowing what is going on in the MCU, and that's okay.
I don't think that there's anything in this movie that really references the MCU at all. Like, almost
hardly anything.
There's I guess this is spoilers for Black Panther and other Marvel films. I guess the death of T'Chaka would be one of them, yes. Right?
But it's recapped so thoroughly that it doesn't matter if you didn't see Civil War.
It doesn't, right? Right, exactly. Actually, I would love to. I saw it with. I mean, practically everybody who I saw it with in the theater, whether I knew them or not, saw Civil War, right? And so there wasn't any like, oh, what's happening?
Yeah.
So it's. I would be curious to sit and watch it with somebody who has not seen most Marvel films or at least Civil War and see like if you get it. But I feel like it. You get that the king is dead and he's the prince and now he's king. There really isn't anything that's referenced otherwise that you need to understand.
Right.
Right.
Right. Exactly. The only other thing, like the only other connective tissue, I think, to the MCU is
Claw.
Claw. Yep. Claw. And I can never remember Martin Freeman's character's name.
Everett Ross.
Ross. I think that's kind of it, right? And I guess, of course, you know, actually, T'Challa himself.
Their relationship, actually, now that you say that. So because they do not, the film doesn't explain why T'Challa and Everett Ross know one another. They just do.
They just do, yeah.
But
again, that's something you can quickly be like, okay, these people know each other, whatever. The same way that T'Challa and everyone from Wakanda, like, you know each other. Like, sort of, okay.
I was going to say, in a weird way, people ask me how this film was because I saw it on Thursday. So there was a lot of like, oh, how is it, blah, blah, blah.
Right, 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 right.
And I've been describing it as Hamlet plus James Bond in Africa.
That's, yeah, lots of James Bond undertones. Yeah, for sure.
And so that scene in the casino, particularly, is very. That's all. That's so James Bond. Like the
very much
the
so.
Lead up to that was Shuri in her lab, and you know, don't touch that. That's my lunch.
Yeah, she's
you know,
Q.
She's Q. Yeah. If Q was the if Q was James Bond's sister, here you
right.
go. And then so you go from that scene directly into South Korea, into the casino. And like him walking into the casino being like, I know that guy. That's total James Bond move because James Bond walks into a casino and knows somebody, but will never tell you why.
Felix.
Yeah, exactly. But if you've never seen, you know, the James Bond movie where they've met each other, it doesn't matter. Like they
doesn't
just
matter.
Know each other. And so
he's a, you know, head of state. He's a important political figure. Of course, he knows lots of people.
Yeah, I 100% agree. He knows lots of people. So let's rewind a little bit. The film. Let's actually not rewind. I don't want to go from beginning of the film to the end of the film. I want because I only saw it once. I assume you also only saw it once.
Just once, yes.
How do I say this? The film, so let's talk about this, the culture of the film first. You know, like it's an important film because it's the first basically all black cast, you know, superhero film. Mm-hmm. In a weird way, it's not really a superhero film. That's kind of like my takeaway from it is like, he's not a superhero. He's a king, you know, and he wears like a costume and whatever else, but it's not really like he's the country's superhero. Like the king is also the superhero of the country,
right?
And the Black Panther suit is just the armor that he wears. It's a you know a cultural symbol for the people of Wakanda, right?
And every king is given these powers.
That's right. And so in a weird way, he doesn't necessarily fall under the superhero banner, like the superhero umbrella. He's in his own corner, which I mean I know Black Panther originally, but like I loved that in this film because it felt fresh in a way. Like you can recognize that, like when he's in Civil War, like he's kind of a superhero, like, or when we go into Infinity War, he's gonna fall under that superhero category, you know, because
right,
he's like
in this story,
fighting for the protection of the world. Yeah,
right but in this story he's more of his country's hero, savior, like that figure, more than he is your traditional superhero. I get what you're saying.
Yeah. So I liked the angle that it took, but I also liked that the film was not it wasn't going to date itself by you know making it making overt messages. The film just was, right? This is the story that we're telling, and this is the story that we're telling, and you can like it or not like it, but it's not going to be a secret, you know, BLM movie or something like that. It's just going to be a good movie, and you can apply that to any movement across any time. And make it stick. So it's almost going to have like an ageless factor to it.
Yeah, that's true. I think there are some things though that are very, very much of this time, and I think that's a good thing. Like, not saying it won't age well, but I think that, you know, the a lot of the talk about the way that, like, talking about, I mean, what we obviously have going on in terms of refugees in the world and things like mm-hmm. that, like, this film addresses that pretty pointedly.
Yep.
Things like Africa's natural resources and things like that as well. It also is pretty pointed about. So I think those are things that are relevant to this time and place. But I get what you're saying in that, like, it has a lot of timeless qualities. But I think a good thing is that Ryan Coogler made sure to include a lot of things that are, like, very rooted in our and relatable to our current world.
Taking
a stand on some of those things.
I definitely agree, and I think what I'm trying to say, like, it addresses those things, and they're in, like, part of the story, but he doesn't call them those things. You know what I mean? He doesn't,
like, allegorical in the way that it talks about
in a sense, or at least a metaphor. Yeah. And that's the part that's going to have that timeless quality, because then you could, if there's another crisis somewhere along the way, you could pick that up and move it over here. You see what I mean? Like, so we're in the Black Lives Matter movement right now, but if this movie was made in the 60s, you'd be in the Civil Rights movement. They're two different movements, right. But you could apply them the same way. That's what I mean. Like, and so it, mm-hmm. yeah, so you yeah. can kind of connect the dots.
Yes.
So that's the only political talk that we're going to have here this evening. Let's talk about how awesome the supporting cast of this film was.
The entire cast of this film was stacked, mm-hmm. so stacked. And there were people, like, I didn't know Sterling K. Brown was going to be in this. I was so delighted when he was there. Like, I was so happy with the way that they just brought in so many incredible actors from that, like, I've seen in you know, all sorts of. From everywhere, from all sorts of movies and TV, it was amazing to see them all in one place.
Yep,
it's an amazing, talented cast.
Incredibly talented. There are three main important women in T'Challa's life, right? And four if you count his mom, but I'm not going to. Though she was great, and I loved her hair. Actually, it was like when they met in the jungle and she had her head and she had her the headpiece off and it was her hair. I was like, that's cool. You should look like that all the time. Like, that's a great look. But so there's Shuri, who is his sister. And she's got kind of like she's got that Q quality, but she's also got a, you know, I don't know. Spunky, irreverent, I don't care about traditions, but I love my brother kind of vibe. I liked that. There's Nakia, Lupita Nyong'o's character, who we heard almost nothing about leading up to this film.
That's right.
And then you get there and then you, like, it's like, oh, she's the love interest, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, that feels so blasé. That, like, you have all these powerful people around T'Challa and then you have the love interest, but not, she's a super cool, like, she's a super cool Wakandan spy instead. And then you have, is that how you say it? Danae? Is that how you say her name?
Danae,
Okoye. Mm-hmm. Is that, I can't remember her name from the film. So she's the general, you know, the general.
She was so badass. I loved her character.
I guess that answered my question, because I was going to say, out of those three, which one was your favorite? Because I feel like they're kind of like the triangle trio, yeah, of T'Challa. You know, these are the people that actually make T'Challa work. You know, we saw him stand on his own. He could do it. Civil War was great. You know, you were awesome. You were one of my favorite parts of Civil War.
Yes.
But he's not incompetent by any stretch of imagination in the film.
No, of course not. But he's got he needs that great supporting cast nonetheless.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree. It's not even just supporting cast. I think it's just like the characters themselves like support and make him grow as a person, which is important for supporting characters. Absolutely. So yeah, but the general was your favorite.
She was my favorite of those three. Yeah. I mean, it's hard to choose, but yes, I think she was my favorite because I was the least familiar with her character. So I had like the fewest expectations and the most delight at what an awesome character she was.
Yeah. That scene where they're driving, when they're chasing Claw and she stops the truck with her spear.
Yes.
That was amazing. It's so cool. I wasn't sure how I was going to feel about the like Wakandan tech, I guess, like how they were going to incorporate it.
Yeah.
But I loved that they kind of worked along this like traditional ancient African kind of motif, but then were able to hide all their advanced weaponry in it, so they're like beyond just pointing a gun at somebody or anything like that. That's so primitive.
Yeah, you know? Yeah.
I loved
the look of Wakanda and how everything steeped in. It looked historical, like it looked like it had a rich and deep history, and yet they have all these technological advances that we can only dream of, right? Like, I love that those things were side by side and not looking like they did. They looking like they belonged together, looking like they very much belong together.
It kind of reminded me of Star Wars that way, where you look at these things and feel like there's a real history to what's happening. There's a real sense of, you know, like purpose and history and structure. And so every place they went in Wakanda felt like it was on purpose, you know, these things. And then, I'm also a big sucker for like giant like monkey statues in the middle of the mountains in the jungle. Like, that to me is like, I loved that stuff when I was a kid, and I loved it here. Like, it's just cool looking. And I should say ape. They weren't monkeys.
Get it right, Tim.
I saw Planet of the Apes plenty of times. And they got very upset when you called them monkeys.
They did.
Very, very upset. What did you think of Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger?
I think Michael B. Jordan is, sadly, probably not for this role, but within like 3 to 5 years, we'll get an Oscar nomination. I think he is one of the most talented people in Hollywood right now. And I think I sent you this the other day, or maybe I didn't. But, you know, kudos to the MCU for saving another Human Torch.
Yep. Did you know this movie in its opening weekend made more than the reboot of Fantastic Four did in its entire run?
Not surprising at all. It's amazing that it totally crushed Deadpool's record for a February release.
Sure. Though Deadpool's an R-rated movie, so technically you have less people going to...
True, but that was still the record for a February release. So like yes, you're right. This was like, but it's easier to crush it because it's not rated R, but it like made almost double. Or I think maybe slightly more than double than what Deadpool did opening weekend.
You know, almost thus proving it's not the weekend, it's the movie.
It's the movie. At least nowadays. Like, if you put a movie with big cachet, with a great cast, with a great director, with everything behind it that's part of this bigger story that everyone loves, it'll do well pretty much no matter what time of year you put it out. Amazing for Ryan Coogler. I think this really shows
third film
Third film. I think this really shows what people want out of their movies.
Good point.
And I think that, you know, when that's why I was a little annoyed when I don't mind saying I was a little bit annoyed when I found out about, like, oh, okay, we're giving another Star Wars series to the Game of Thrones guys, really? Where, when, like, somebody like a Ryan Coogler, somebody who doesn't get a voice in Star Wars, like, is here making this amazing film that does so incredibly well and that people are flocking to see. You know, I think that I hope that studios are paying attention and noting that, like, here's this Ryan Coogler film that did incredibly well. In a few weeks, we have an Ava DuVernay film that in A Wrinkle in Time.
Yep.
That is getting amazing buzz as well. Think about these creators, you know, Patty Jenkins last year with Wonder Woman. Like, think about these creators and give more people like them a voice. But that's my read on the situation. But Michael B. Jordan, amazing.
I agree with everything you said except for that very last sentence, actually. I was not.
You didn't care for Michael B. Jordan, really?
I thought he kind of just hammed it up. And I think he started interesting, actually. Like, that scene in the museum was really interesting. And I liked, like, the choices he was making and all. And then as it kind of went on, he just became like, I'm going to do things because I'm blah, blah, blah. Like, and that, it just, to me, still, even though I think Michael B. Jordan is great. Like, he made me care about a movie about boxing, which is a tremendous effort on his part, because I'm not a huge Rocky fan, don't really care about those films, don't really care about boxing. And I saw Creed and I was like, wow, this is one of the best films of the year. Like, awesome. So good. So well done. And he was a big part of that. And I just, he was just a weak Marvel villain to me again.
Wow. So where, give me a sense of, because I don't really know where you stand on this. Who do you think is, like, the strongest Marvel villain? Like, where would you sort of rank, you know, a couple of the big ones?
Oh my God! Now I got to look up so Marvel. Far. Now I got
to
look up
Marvel. Not every single
films.
One, right? We don't have to go into Whiplash, but
obviously, you know, that's the strongest one, Frank.
Loki.
Loki's probably, he's probably one of the strongest. Some characters get away. I think some characters get away with being evil, you know, like, they can just be evil, and like the
because
Red Skull, like,
I'm evil.
Exactly. Like, let's say, so like the Red Skull, I think, is one of the strongest ones.
Okay.
But
yeah.
He's just,
even though he's just evil for evil's sake.
Right. But I think because that's his character.
That's his thing.
That's his thing. But he's also a Nazi. I'd feel like he's not supposed to be anything but that.
Yeah.
You know,
I'd hope he'd be evil for evil's sake. Yeah.
Yeah. I think actually Vulture was a strong villain. Thought that was actually he was quite good.
What about Hela going, you know, not recently?
Hela was good, but like I think she's good because she's Kate Blanchett, mm-hmm. but like, again, as a character, kind of like Michael B. Jordan, she's kind of just evil for the sake of being evil.
Okay.
Like, she doesn't sit in that strong category for me. Now, Michael B. Jordan in the film, Killmonger in the film, is not evil for the sake of being evil. He has legitimate cause,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
So I'm not, so that I don't want to get that confused, but I just think that I think his delivery of the character was a little like, you know, and I'm gonna burn it all. Like, why you gotta say it like that?
Okay.
Like, I don't even care that you're doing that. I don't even care that you're doing it. In fact, I kind of went, no, don't, no, but the,
right.
You know, but the purple hearts.
Right.
I just, yeah, there was something about it I didn't quite like. I loved his look. I thought his look was really cool. And I just, I don't know. I couldn't get on board. He didn't just take away from the film for
okay.
me.
Good.
He just didn't add anything. I think that's kind of my, Yeah, I don't know. And I know that is also not a popular opinion.
Yeah, I'm surprised to hear you say that. I think that he very much was... I think he was very much meant to be there as... We get a lot of villains where we are shown the very like sort of what's currently fashionable idea of every villain thinks they're the good guy, right? And every villain has their motivations, and that's a very like, it's for the last 10 or 15 years now, I think that's in a very in fashion way of portraying a villain, right? Would you agree with that?
Yep, absolutely.
So, and that's in multiple media, TV, comics, movies, whatever. I think he is very much meant to be there as a stand-in for how a lot of people feel, like they feel disenfranchised, they feel powerless, yes. They feel like their life was ripped away from them, and that their chance at a fair life was taken away from them, or at happiness was taken away from them. And he is there to be a representative of that. And I think a lot of people identified with that. Now, obviously, he did bad things with that, but I think people understood the pain and the sorrow and the suffering that this character went through, and you know, it gives them that identifiable character. Now, T'Challa, on the other hand, who also went through great suffering, you know, handled it with the right way and is focused on morals and justice. And
well, T'Challa went through that suffering much later in life. Not as a child.
Not the childhood trauma that.
Yes. So, like I said, he has good motivations. Yeah. I'm not, well, I mean, good motivations, you know, in quotes.
Understandable,
you know, I mean?
Motivations, yeah.
Yeah, I get it from that point. I just don't care for the way that Michael B. Jordan is portrayed. I don't care for his delivery, which surprised me because I like him. And I've seen him be, and I think he just got hammy as it went on.
Okay.
And then by the end, he wasn't so hammy. Like, I think there was, you know, but like that middle section of him becoming king and being like, and now I'm just going to talk like this the whole time. And I'm blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, you know, you're a better actor than this. I just, you know, he didn't feel in those scenes. He didn't feel like a real person. He felt like a character in a comic book movie.
Okay. Okay.
And whereas everybody else felt like a real person, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. or as they do in Marvel films. But, you know, because even Claw, who was kind of hammy and whatever, you know, like, I made it rain. Yeah. You know, like,
yeah.
All that stuff. He still felt kind of, he was still menacing in his own way. Actually, really liked Andy Serkis in this film. He was really good. I like Andy Serkis and everything. I'm an Andy Serkis fanboy. But, because we're BFFs, because we met that one time.
That's definitely how that works. Yeah.
Yeah. But I don't know. There was something about it. I couldn't get across. So, but sometimes I'm wrong, period. But, sometimes it's expectations versus reality. You know, sometimes I need to see a film again to go, okay, I see what you're doing there. You know, I thought something else, but here you are doing this, and I'll meet you there.
Okay.
So maybe I just need to see it again. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I always really enjoy him. I think he, like, lights up the screen whenever he's in anything. But hey, I get that, you know, if that sort of level of hamming it up wasn't for you, then it wasn't for you. I enjoyed it, and I thought that it was sort of consistent with the character. But I hear where you're coming from. I do.
I really like Justin Hammer. Is that?
Oh, Justin Hammer was fantastic. Yeah, great MCU villain.
Yeah, and I mean, his motivations weren't even like super strong or whatever. He was just a business dude.
Yeah, but his performance was really good.
Yeah, it was the performance, because, you know, like, even like somebody like Jeff Bridges as Obadiah Stane in Iron Man.
Obadiah Stane was fantastic, I thought.
Yeah, like, sometimes it's literally just the delivery. It's like the character can be well enough written, but the delivery. Actually, Armin Zola, actually, that was a good, he was a good
Trevor,
villain.
Don't forget Trevor.
Trevor would have been a great Marvel villain, except for the twist. Ugh. Twist. What a terrible movie that is. No, it's fine, I guess. It's not that fine. You know, King, you know, if you count the Netflix films, Kingpin's probably the best Marvel villain.
Well, but then you also have to think about Purple Man.
Oh, yeah. That's close, actually.
If we're going to count those, then, you know, that's a different thing.
Yeah. Even Cottonmouth, actually.
Oh,
yeah.
Cottonmouth is also really good. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Those shows have really good villains.
Yeah, for the most part, actually. Actually, you know, you could count Winter Soldier, technically speaking.
As a villain, yeah. Yeah.
As a villain, originally, you could count him, and that would be okay. Yeah, I don't know. Loki's probably Marvel's best villain.
Yeah. He's definitely the most beloved.
Yeah. Well, trickster characters, just people like him, and you can bring him back for whatever you want. And Killgrave, but Killmonger is not a trickster character. He has very clear cut motivations, but I don't know. Something about him. I don't know. I liked interesting. I want to see what you think about this. The film moves in kind of like these concentric circles, right? So every time we come to a place, we come back to that place. We always go through the same motions twice with different motivations each time. So we start the film with the kids playing basketball, right, in Oakland, where Ryan Coogler's from, fun fact. Which is why I think they landed on Oakland. And so you start with this kids playing basketball, and Wakanda is responsible for the death of, you know, the prince, right? Right. You know, there's some death there. And then you come back to that scene at the end with kids playing basketball, and you're responsible. Now they're responsible for life, you know, for giving these kids hope and vision and a clear future and stuff like that. So you have that. You have T'Challa's waterfall fight, right? Mm-hmm. And then, you know, for kingship, the right of kingship, and you have that. But then you have that same challenge happen again with Killgrave, and it goes in an opposite direction. You come back to that. You have T'Challa visiting the astral plane to talk to his father in a very wholehearted, "Dad, I love you. I'm not ready to be without you. Oh, but you are, son. I'm, you know, remember, you know,"
right,
all that kind of thing, you know. But then he learns something, and he comes back to the astral plane, and we go through this breakdown again. So every time we get something at the beginning of the film, where it kind of finishes off a loop, the end of the film, or the next step of the film, the other half, breaks those circles over and over and over again. And so it just kind of moves in that progression. So it might feel like the film is repeating itself if you watch it that way, because you're like, "Oh, I've seen this already. Like, I watched this already." But it all is done with such exactitude and purpose to, like, the first half is almost like, it kind of, in a weird way, almost reminded me of, like, Into the Woods, you know, like, where the first half is, like, the fairy tale,
expect,
and,
okay,
you know, and then the second half, like, breaks all of that down, because it's his ascension as king, and then his decline as king, you know, and then his ascension again. So it just kind of keeps moving like that. So it was cool. I liked it. It was such an interesting structure to a film. I've never really seen that happen before. It'd be like Luke Skywalker getting, like, caught in a, like, trash compactor at the beginning of the film, and then being stuck in one at the end of the film, and being like, "I've been here before. Now I know how to get out of it." So it's cool. I liked that. That was my script analysis of the evening. Yeah. It was cool.
I think my Amazon Echo thought I was talking to her when I said I like that.
Oh, and she was like, "Thank you. Thank you.
She lit up. I was like, "Nope, not you."
You know what I'm really happy about? How I was not up on the first trailer to this film, and I was wrong. Do you remember that?
Yes. Yes, I do remember that.
When the trailer for this film first came out, I didn't think it looked creative. I didn't think some of it looked kind of like shoddy CG and green screen, and I was wrong. It looked amazing.
I think those are probably just effects that weren't fully finished when they when the trailer came out. But yeah, I'm glad to hear you say that. Yeah, I agree. It looked great. Everything looked great. The effects were completely like they were incredible. They were absolutely incredible.
Mm-hmm. When I was in the theater and T'Challa jumps, he uses kind of like the concussive force, the kinetic force to like spring onto the skyscraper,
yeah,
and then run and then get the thing. There was someone in front of me that went, "Oh damn!" Like as like he ran up and then down and took the tire off, the crowd went nuts.
That's awesome.
Like, and I was like, "That scene's in the trailer."
Yeah, well,
like it keeps showing. But I like people were like that. That was amazing. This guy is the guy.
It's still he's amazing. Damn impressive.
Yeah, it was damn impressive. All of it was. I liked the way they used vibranium in this film, mm-hmm. like this kind of like sandy, you know, sand. I don't know, like what would you call it? Like, what was the toy where you could play with the sand inside the? Not like an etch and sketch, but maybe kind of like an etch, like a 3D
sand
etch
art
and sketch
stuff.
Yeah, sand art. Yeah, it kind of reminded me of that. Because it would like form into images and
sure.
stuff.
Yeah,
and then,
yeah, yeah.
And then colorize
yeah,
and all
yeah,
that
yeah.
fun stuff.
I get that. Yes, yeah. Yeah, I get that. I see that. I loved the way vibranium was used, and I love how versatile it was that it could power all that those like various different kinds of technology that they have, like how it's all just powered by this one resource that they have.
Yeah, that's a nice message, isn't it? You know, we have one resource, plenty. I also like that they kind of mentioned that like they've barely scratched the surface of
right.
what they're using.
Yes.
Like they are able to mine it, but not like deplete it. They can responsibly use their resource. I think that's an important message.
Yeah.
I liked the Iron Man callback, the UN scene. That was
yep.
pretty. That was classic Iron Man, right there. Oh, yeah, it was cool. It was cool. Do you think Everett Ross was a necessary character?
No.
No, I don't think
no,
so
don't.
Either.
Nope.
I liked him.
I liked him
but,
a lot,
like,
but I don't think he was necessary, no. He was like a sidekick in this movie, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he was good. I mean, listen, I always enjoy Martin Freeman, and it's always
and
kind of...
Everything.
And everything,
yeah.
And it's always funny when he uses his American accent, which is actually kind of rare for him. But, you know, he was fine. He didn't need to be there. It wasn't about him.
No, I agree. But, you know, characters, you know, side characters are still, can be still important.
Sure.
Right. You know, they don't, but I feel like he didn't have to go back to Wakanda, you know, like the problems that he helped solve, quote unquote, like being in the ship and everything like that. Like, oh, there was another, that's another thing they set up early, right? They set up the car driving sequence,
yeah, the
you know.
Simulator type thing, the remote controller
yeah,
thing, yeah.
So, yes, I like that all of that was done so none of it feels like, oh, they just happened to have that. That's convenient.
Yeah, I thought that was cool.
Like everything's played out early, which is cool. You know what's a weird scene that I keep coming back to for no reason, literally no reason, is when T'Challa goes down to see Shuri for the first time and they're just chatting, and she goes, "What are those?" And he's just wearing sandals. Like,
yeah.
And he's like, I thought I'd go old school today. You know, I think they'd love it, you know. And then she gives him, I call them sneakers.
Yeah.
Get it? Yeah? No, all right. that was good. I also liked when Shuri might have been my favorite, because I liked when who challenges him and she raises her hand. She's like, "Nah, I'm just kidding. This is really boring. Can we go home now?"
No, she was really funny.
Yeah,
she was great. She was like really good comic relief and really cool as like being the like smart, you know, scientist behind mm-hmm. all this tech.
It's cool. Well, she in the comics becomes Black Panther. He steps away from the throne, and so she's technically next in line after that. And so there's a bit of time where she's Black Panther herself. And I know there's concept art of, you know, the costume, like the suit that she wears, the armor she wears with her panther gauntlets and stuff. There's concept art from the Black Panther art book that has her in a Black Panther suit instead of that. So that would have been a cool callback. It could have been a cool callback to the comics.
Yep.
Yeah. I was sent a text, like, you know, like those superhero text message threads.
Sure. Yeah.
I was sent one today texting between Dr. Doom and Black Panther.
Oh.
And it was like, I don't want to talk to you, Victor. And they're like, actually, we're a lot alike. You know, we're isolationist nations that won't share resources with the world. And Black Panther's like, interesting. I'm listening. But that got me like thinking, I was like, I would love to see like a Wakanda versus Latveria comic, or some kind of political thriller involving just Wakanda and Latveria would be super interesting. You know, I would love to see that.
I don't want to put you on the spot here, but and you don't have to answer this right away if you want to take some time to think about it. But are there any?
Yes, I will marry you.
Okay. Are there any Black Panther like graphic novels that are sort of must reads for, you know, that you've read and really enjoyed? I admittedly have not read very much, and I'm sort of, you know, is there a run that's I know there was like the Christopher Priest run several years back, maybe 10 years back or more. But I'm kind of wondering what the, you know, sort of definitive, you know, when you think Spider-Man, you think Bendis, those sorts of things. What are the, is there a top best known Black Panther run that you know, anybody who enjoyed this movie should take a look and maybe read? And again, I'm not trying to put you on the spot. If you need to think about it, or, you know, if you don't remember one right now, that's fine.
That's a good. I remember the Black Panther Secret Invasion tie-in being really good,
because
It's basically Wakanda like tearing through aliens and being awesome. There was a, I think it was called Who is the Black Panther? I can't remember exactly, but it was like Black Panther for beginners. It kind of went through, it kind of went through some of the history of Black Panther. A Black Panther T'Chaka encounters Captain America in it, which is pretty cool. And I think it's John Romita Jr.
Oh, awesome.
John Romita Jr., I'm pretty sure. And then the one that's going on now, the one that's going on now is good. I am not reading it. It's by, I read the first issue, but, you know, sometimes you just fall behind on things and you never go back to them.
Sure.
I think Ta-Nehisi Coates is his name.
Oh, yes, yes.
Right?
I think he did. Yes, you're right. I did hear that he wrote that. Yes.
Yeah, so I think he's actually still writing.
Yeah, he was actually an advisor on the movie, too.
Oh, was he?
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. I did not know that. So that one is like legitimately like the politics of Wakanda,
yeah,
as opposed to just like, you know, T'Challa glow popping, you
yeah,
know,
yeah,
whatever else.
Okay.
So I would maybe go with that one because it's current. And then there was actually, it's not really Wakanda, but it, whenever, if you look at anything with the Illuminati, the Marvel's Illuminati, which is the five smartest people in the five smartest men, I should say, in the Marvel Universe. It's Iron Man, Doctor Strange, T'Challa, Professor X, and Black Bolt. And they were this like secret cabal that like shadowy, like organized. Oh, and Reed Richards. I knew I forgot.
Of course. Yeah. Yeah.
And they like behind the scenes organized like and deconstructed all these different events to kind of shape the Marvel Universe into something they thought was like for ultimate peace and whatever else. Mm-hmm. It's like it's really, really, it's a couple years old now, so it's a little outdated in what they were doing, but it was a very intriguing book, and T'Challa was a big part of that. So I would maybe go with any of those. I know Comixology is having massive.
Oh, right.
I know they're having massive Black Panther sales right now. But he's a character that never really kind of got a lot of steam in the way that some other characters, you know, in the way that some other characters get to. You know, his book, he's had like a lot of different books over the years, but he's never really had kind of a mainstay that people were like, oh, you've got to read this. If that makes sense.
It does. Hopefully now that'll change kind of the way Iron Man came more to the front after his film.
I hope so. Actually, that's a great example because Iron Man was definitely like that. He didn't have tons of. He had some popular stories, but he didn't have a lot.
Yeah.
So this might be a good way for people to kind of. This might be a good way for people to kind of get into. Black Panther the same way, because Iron Man's big popularity didn't really come until Civil War, and then the film a couple years later. But he wasn't really even popular in the comics until Civil War. That's what I mean.
Yeah, until
and then and right, and then the film in 08, and so and Black Panther could be the same thing. This could really like he became more popular because of Civil War, the movie,
yeah.
And this movie. I mean, in his own film might actually launch him into something because it's a really cool concept. Like you got to give Jack Kirby and Stan Lee credit for this. This is a very interesting concept. First black superhero.
The first one of this level of prominence anyway.
No, first black superhero.
Oh, great.
Yeah, completely. Yeah, well, sometimes I think Luke Cage is, but it's not. It's Black Panther's later. The first. Yeah, Black Panther's the number one. He's cool. And I'm glad that is. I'm so happy this film was successful.
Me too.
In this way. Like, so happy. I think
I was really excited because I could tell there were people there who maybe hadn't seen that many Marvel movies before, and I knew this because they didn't stay for the after credits scene.
I know. Well, so, why do you get up? You know you're not supposed to get up.
Well, they didn't. So I was excited because I was like, all right, so they're missing the after credits scene, whatever. But like, that's awesome that there were that many people who came and had like didn't care that they didn't know what was going on, you know, in this movie universe. They were just like, I just want to see this movie. Like this, I heard it's great. It looks great. I want to see it. So that was very encouraging to me. Like there's, you know, it's reaching a new audience, a new level of fandom that is being brought into the fold.
In some way, it's kind of like Wonder Woman that way. There were a lot of people who went to go see Wonder Woman that were don't care about the other things, could care less about Superman or Batman or them fighting each other or whatever. I'm here for this. Exactly. I mean, the joy of the Marvel Universe in a lot of ways is that like he's in the next one.
Yeah.
So you don't even have to wait like 4 years or whatever to see the next Wakanda will be literally in the next movie.
Yep.
It's Kevin Feige said this was the best film they've ever made. Did you know that?
Wow.
He turned to Ryan Coogler at the end of the premiere and he said, this might be the best film we ever made.
That's awesome.
Yeah. It's cool.
Good
it's
for Ryan cool. Coogler, man. That's awesome.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's definitely one of Marvel's strongest. Easy top five for me now, I think.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that's a lot of movies now, if you really think about it.
10 years.
Yeah. It's a lot of movies. It's great. I think we're done now, but I think we should revisit Black Panther, maybe in the form of a commentary.
I'd be down for that. I'd be very down for that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Let's okay, next episode on Beer with Geeks, commentary.
No. do you want to say anything about the post-credits scenes?
Oh, post-credit scenes. Well, we talked about the United Nation one already, but there was also One-Armed Jesus. Bucky is in the Wakanda, which we know because of the end of Civil War. He's put on ice until T'Challa's like, our scientists will fix him because we're awesome. You won't know that we're awesome until my film comes out, but we're awesome.
But trust me on this. We got this.
But we've got this. We're awesome. So he's put on ice, and he wakes up in the tent, and Shuri's the one kind of talking to him. So he's probably been cured of his programming. That's basically my understanding, which means that he's probably going to get also a vibranium arm, So I would, which would be super cool, and I'd really love to see that arm do something special.
Yes,
apart from just be strong.
Yeah,
because Bucky needs something.
He needs,
you
something.
Know, he's just a dude. He needs something.
I wonder. Do you think Cap dies and Bucky becomes Cap?
I don't think so.
No,
no. I wouldn't mind actually.
I wouldn't mind it. I wouldn't mind it.
No, and I think Sebastian Stan is a big enough star now that he could probably...
He could pull it off.
But I don't think so. I think we'll get more Cap. I don't think we'll get any more Iron Man, but I think we'll get more Cap.
Mm.
That's my... Yeah.
All right.
But like I said, I wouldn't mind, though.
We'll see. Black Panther will return in...
In Infinity War.
That was super, super cool. I know they've done that before at the end of the films, but it always reminds me of Bond because that was the first time I was like, James Bond will return in Moonraker.
Whatever the next movie is. Yeah.
I've always...
Moonraker. Why did you choose Moonraker?
Because that's the one that famously, they actually didn't say he'll return to Moonraker.
Oh, really? Yeah. I didn't know that.
Well, because Moonraker... Wait, am I remembering right? Moonraker is the one with the laser, the Star Wars one, right?
Yeah. Laser beam.
Yeah. So that one wasn't planned to come out. So at the end of, I have to remember my chronology of Bond films now, but at the end of the film before Moonraker, it said James Bond will return, and it said a different movie. I'm pulling it up now just so I can get. So it said at the end of The Spy Who Loved Me, it said James Bond will return in For Your Eyes Only, but they quickly
that's not right.
They quickly slotted in Moonraker after Spy Who Loved Me came out right in 77, so before Star Wars was really the phenomenon that it became. And when they saw the success of Star Wars, they were like, we need to capitalize on this fad before it dies. So they slotted in Moonraker, and they delayed.
Jokes on them. Star Wars will never die.
I know, right? But they delayed For Your Eyes Only. Because of that. So it says at the end, like the Ashley says he'll return in the wrong movie.
That's awesome. Yeah. I did not know that. Let's end this episode on a bit of James Bond
trivia.
There you go. That's fantastic. Cool. Okay, so you can find us on beerwithgeeks.com and Gmail and Twitter and Facebook. You can rate and review us on iTunes and all the places the podcast can be found. You can also check out ThoughtBubbleAudio.com to check out all of our other Thought Bubble audio shows, including Academy Rewind, Hate Watch With Us, Supergirl TV Talk, Tolkien TV Talk, Starkville's House of L. There's also another one coming down the pipeline, as Frank and I have found out just a little while ago from today. And by a little while ago from today, I mean from recording this episode. and... Boom. That was not it. Patreon. You can also check out patreon.com/thoughtbubbleaudio for all extra Patreon goodies over there. Frank, I did it.
You did it,
not
buddy.
As well as I usually do it, but that's okay.
You got us there.
I got us there. Well, is there anything that you'd like to say?
Wakanda forever. Long live the king.
Wakanda forever. Oh, music in this film. So good.
So well used.
I listened to the album in its completion, like, there's like real theme, character themes, and real like things come back. Like, oh, it was awesome. Yeah.
So good.
You know, I love a good leitmotif, Frank. You know, I do. So, okay. That's it. All right. Well, then until next time.
Cheers.